Government professor at Skidmore College, Bo Breslin, joins us this morning. His new book is A Constitution for the Living, Imagining How Five Generations of Americans Would Rewrite the Nation's Fundamental Law. What would America's constitutions have looked like if each generation wrote its own? Well, Breslin reimagines American history to answer that question by tracing the story from the 1787 Constitutional Convention up to the present. He presents an account of historical figures and how they might have shaped their particular generation's constitution. Bo Breslin holds the Joseph Palamountain Jr. Chair in Government at Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs. He is the author of From Words to Worlds and the Commutarian, is that right?
Communitarian.
So that's not right. Communitarian Constitution.
It's
we
close.
Welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Bo Breslin, thank you very much for being with us. How nice to have you here.
Joe, thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure. There are a lot of us out there who the highest ambition we have is being on your show. So I checked that off my list.
Well, I just hope everyone raises the bar a little bit. But thank you very much. It's really nice to have you, and I appreciate it. So let's talk about how this came about. I talked to a lot of authors about novels and fiction, and we call this speculative fiction. Mm-hmm. This is basically speculative nonfiction.
Right.
So what brought you to that point?
So as a constitutional theorist, I'm super interested in late 18th century America. And there's the very famous debate between Madison and Jefferson about enduring constitutions. And so I was thinking about work that I was doing, and I reread the letters from Madison to Jefferson. And the story goes that Madison, finishing up the Constitution in Philadelphia, ships it off to Jefferson to get his reaction to it. Jefferson's in Paris, unable to go to the Constitutional Convention. And Jefferson writes back and says, you know, there are things I like about the Constitution and things I don't like about the Constitution, but the one thing that I would change is I would have a sunset clause for the Constitution. Every generation ought to write its own. And he has this very famous phrase where he says, the earth belongs to the living. And so I thought, Joe, quite simply, what would those constitutions have looked like if Jefferson had won that debate? Madison obviously wins the debate. We're 234 years into our Constitution. But what would those constitutions have looked like if Jefferson had won that debate?
It is interesting to me. So let's also talk about this, because it is imagining how five generations.
Right.
Obviously, there have been more generations between the time it was written to now.
Correct.
But so why five?
So Jefferson understood that each generation turns over every 19 years. He had this very scientific understanding of it. But for me, writing narrative accounts of constitutional conventions, doing it every 19 years seemed a bit indulgent.
Yeah.
So I took the spirit of Jefferson's idea and thought about what it would be like if we went with average life expectancy of an American. So in 1787, the average life expectancy of what amounted to a white male was 38. So I put the first constitutional convention after 1787 in 1825.
Yeah.
The five that I do are all based on the life expectancy at that moment. So it's 1825, 1863, 1903, 1953, and 2022.
The fundamentals, how much do they change? The spirit of the document and the fundamentals, how much do they change?
Yeah, so they're not going to change a lot until, in my account, they're not going to change a lot until 2022, right? So the fundamentals, you guys talked an hour ago about ranked choice voting, parliamentary
right.
systems. I still believe, even today, that we would not, if given a chance to return to Philadelphia to write a new constitution, we would not adopt a parliamentary system. Constitutional framers are conservative, not in the Republican big R sense, but in the status quo sense. And so I think the fundamentals wouldn't change. My 2022 chapter has a couple of dramatic parts to it, but you know, one of them is, for example, the reduction in power of the Senate. Undemocratic Senate, we need to do something about that, right?
Yeah.
So reduction in power of the Senate, you know, try to think about ways to make the Senate different and enhance the power of the House of Representatives. But we wouldn't go from a bicameral system to a unicameral system. We wouldn't go from a first-past-the-post system to a parliamentary system simply because of the fact that we kind of like what we have, even if we don't like the people who occupy these positions.
So it just how does anything – I mean, I understand – so I understand the idea of the book, obviously, but – you know, it seems impossible for me to think that we could do anything fundamentally different given the polarization that we have. So if we had the, let's say, four previous constitutional conventions that you outline in the book, would that have eradicated said polarization?
I don't think so. Remember, arguably the most polarized election in our history is 1800,
right?
Jefferson and Adams. So I don't think polarization is going away. What's interesting is the previous four imaginary constitutional conventions could have changed some things in such a way that we might be in a better place today than we are, but I don't think it would be dramatically different. So, for example, the Electoral College would have changed in 1825 because you had 1824 election go into the House of Representatives when John Quincy Adams won. That's the second time in the, you know, between 1787 and 1825 that you had a quote-unquote failed election, the first one being Jefferson's going to the House of Representatives, the second one being 1824, you would have done something. The constitutional framers would have done something in 1825 about that. They would have done something about selection of judges early on, too, that might have changed the trajectory of federal court judges. Nowadays, we talk about the need for federal court judges, the idea that federal court judges ought not to have life tenure. Give them 18-year terms or something like that. It would have been an easier leap if you had had previous conventions along the way that were kind of making those changes.
And I didn't know this, but in the book, it was Madison who said, yeah, two-year terms is that's what we're looking at, because we want the legislature to always have a connection to its people.
Correct.
And, oh, then look how that turned out.
Yeah, but you know, so Madison did that as a compromise, right? Because the anti-federalists, those who were, who they wanted more frequent elections. They wanted, somebody writes that we need elections monthly, you know, annually. And Madison, recognizing that he wasn't going to get anything like a four-year term for House of Representatives, settles on the two-year term as a compromise. Madison's a great compromiser. Bill of Rights is an example of that.
So when it comes to the ultimate, again, back to my question about polarization, you know, who even, how do you do that? I mean, how do you, how do you get a constitutional convention up and running?
Oh, so, you know, there are examples. South Africa has a great example.
Yeah.
Couldn't have been a more tinderbox polarized nation in the early 90s when they had to put together a constitution. The way they did it was broad-based participation. So, you know, one of the things I talk about in the book is a 2022 constitution. It would be interesting to think about crowdsourcing a constitution like Iceland did, right? So you and I could participate even if we were not delegates. In South Africa, they had large, wide swaths of interest group involvement. And it's clunky. It takes a long time. But I think if you had a constitutional convention, it couldn't just be lawyers and politicians, which are the traditional folks who do this work. It had to be folks like you and me. And I think if you had elected delegates, you'd actually make some progress as opposed to appointed politicians and lawyers.
You look at the 1953 constitutional convention that you imagine in this book. We have since the one prior to that you would have written about is 1903.
Right.
So in that time, you have two world wars.
Right.
Then I'm thinking to myself, and you address this, but you think to yourself, well, would we have had the world wars?
Yeah. Yeah. So, the you know, constitutions matter.
Yeah.
Right? They make a difference. I think one of the problems that I have as a student of the Constitution is a lot of Americans don't pay much attention to them. They kind of revere them from afar. Constitutions matter. So How would life have changed between 1903 and 1953? Would we have had the two world wars? Would we have had the Great Depression? That's it's an interesting experiment in counterfactual history. I think it's possible that we wouldn't.
Yes, counterfactual history. So what that also brings to my mind then is, do we then look at this and say, because it seems in this model that we learn from our mistakes.
Mm-hmm. That's the idea, at least.
That we learn from our mistakes. Right, right. We check in every once in a while and say, oh, well, that's not working.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And this allows that to be addressed. So without that, how do we learn from our mistakes?
Yeah. So, as a political scientist, I think we learn politically from our mistakes by holding folks in power accountable, right?
Right.
Unfortunately, you know, you have the situation where the incumbency rate, for example, of members of Congress is so high. We tend to like our Congress members. I like Paul Tonko, but I don't like Congress, right? So.
Right.
The accountability is the what we need in order for us to make the changes necessary in the political arena. The problem is we just don't hold folks accountable.
You make this point later in the book, and I'm interested in what you think, because we have talked about different you have compared to other systems of South mm-hmm. Africa being just one, and perhaps one of the most recent. But what's interesting to me is the changes we are seeing now, and it's let's say the situation that we see now is global.
Right.
It is a global issue. So does that then affect, does what happened globally impact what happens in the 1825, 1863, 1903, 1953, 2022 constitutional conventions?
Yeah, so for the longest time, historically, Americans have kind of had an insular view of
yes.
their own, certainly their own political, and part of it is American exceptionalism. Somehow we think we have the answers to all the political questions, and our political design is the best in the business. It's not the best in the business. So I remember that, you know, I teach constitutional law, and there was this wonderful debate between Stephen Breyer and Justice Scalia about the use of foreign court cases to inform constitutional interpretation in the United States. Scalia thought it was absurd to do that kind of thing. Breyer thought it was worth paying attention to. My guess, Joe, is over our generation, we will spend more time thinking about the global impacts on our political structure and in a way that we have not prior to, say, the 21st century.
It also the name of the book is A Constitution for the Living, and that idea that when you go with it, gun rights would be different, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
I have a section in there in which we talk about the idea of how do you handle gun rights in a 2022 constitutional convention. My worry is that, again, because framers tend to be conservative, that we would debate the issue, but then not much change would happen.
When do we change the term well-regulated militia?
I would like to change that yesterday myself.
Right. But I mean, even in this construct.
I think you have to, in this particular construct, today is probably not the day. Maybe the
yeah.
next constitutional convention.
Yeah.
But today is, I just don't see it on the horizon.
Yeah. But even, so in, but at some point, maybe even 1953, do they say, oh, well, do we need a well-regulated militia? Does that wording change?
Yeah, I don't. So the answer is, one of the things that's interesting about this book, and I'm certainly not dodging the question, but I would say this. One of the things that's interesting about the book is that you have 100 people in the room, you'd have 100 different narratives for this, right?
Right,
because,
absolutely.
Because I'm picking particular things that I think would happen, right? My goal is to write what is a credible attempt at understanding what would have happened. So would 1953 have brought to the fore the idea of the well-regulated militia? Perhaps, but I actually don't think so. I think that's much more of a modern discussion.
So because technology has a lot to do with this, right? I mean, we change, you know, and what is available to us. But overall, I mean, that also tells us that even in what you have laid out in this imagining of these constitutional conventions, that we're slow to act, that we take it slow. And maybe that's not a bad thing.
I'm a Madisonian. So,
okay.
I mean, the interesting thing about this book is I write about as if, you know, Jefferson was right. I don't think Jefferson was right. I actually have a certain reverence for our Constitution. I think there are some flaws in it and so on. But a Constitution that's 233 plus years old is going to create a system where it's slow to act.
Yes.
For sure. And my hope in this book is that by tracing the constitutional conventions, these five constitutional conventions, what I really hope for, Joe, is the fact that people will have a conversation about contemporary constitutionalism. Like, what does the U.S. Constitution mean to us today? And the hope is that we won't always act as slowly and as incrementally as we have done.
We have 2 minutes left. So in the 2022 Imagine Constitutional Convention, who's in the room?
So my favorite person, this was in 2 minutes, this was a complicated part of the book process, because in 1825, 1863, 1903, 1953, I could use real historical figures. In 2022, I can't use real historical figures. We're still around.
Right.
So I had to find actual people. And my favorite one is I reached out to a guy named Mike Bruni, who's executive director and president of the Sierra Club, and asked him to, quote unquote, participate in my constitutional convention. And he was thrilled to do so. So back and forth, he crafted what amounts to one of the Bill of Rights that talks about the environment. So it's the Mike Brunies that are in the room. It's the Phil Blumels, who term limits guy, who's in the room. It's folks like me and you who are in the room, but it's also politicians and so on. The hope is that you have enough interest group involvement and enough representation, people of color, women, and so on, that have been historically not allowed to participate in political process, that it would be a robust and rich conversation.
I realize this is unfair, but in 30 seconds, and referencing another document, but how much of a say do we the people have?
I think if you had a constitutional convention right now, we'd have way more say than we could imagine, because I do think some notion of crowdsourcing would be part of the, not in a Wikipedia way,
right,
but in a give us, you know, we'll take in as much data as possible on what should be in a new constitution. So I actually think you and I and other we the people would have much more of a say in a new constitution today than at any other time in history.
Well, that is a fun thing to imagine.
Isn't it?
The book is fun and it's very important. Bo Breslin's new book is A Constitution for the Living, Imagining How Five Generations of Americans Would Rewrite the Nation's Fundamental Law. The book is published by Stanford University Press. Bo Breslin, what a pleasure to have you here. I thank you very much for taking the time and for talking to us so eloquently about the subject.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, A Constitution for the Living. It is published by Stanford University Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.